Hello everyone, this is Neil Ewers, and this is a review of the Zoom H1 recorder. Just received it yesterday. The cost is $99, and its claim to fame is it has no menus. Interestingly enough, I'm not using the H1 at this point, because what Zoom says is that the H1 has the same electronics as the H2. Well, what better way to find that out than to start out with the H2 and then switch to the H1, which is exactly what we're going to do now. This is the H2. I'm about 7-8 inches from this microphone in a very quiet room. And now this is the H1. And this is the Zoom H1 recorder, coming to you from the same quiet room. One note about this recording. You hear me in a very quiet room, and so you hear a lot of hiss, microphone noise, maybe some floor noise, etc. And so you say, this sounds like a really noisy recorder. Well, it's not. Relative to others, it is quite quiet. It's not the quietest, but it's certainly not the most noisy. You hear the noise because there's nothing else to mask it out. If you were out, even in another part of my house where there was some ambient noise, it would start to mask the noise of the recorder. And if that ambient noise is loud enough, you don't hear the noise at all. Here, that's all you do hear, because that's all there is besides my speaking. So you might think, whoa, I don't want to buy this recorder because it's too noisy. Well, you'll have ample opportunity, I think, to discover that it's quite quiet, actually. Okay, so this has been a comparison of the Zoom H2 and the Zoom H1, and before we're done, we'll do another comparison between these recorders. But for now, on to something else. Okay, I'm in a different part of my house now. Pretty echoey. I'm using a windscreen, so I'm close talking a little more. I'm probably 4 inches away from the mics. What comes in the box? It's pretty simple. A recorder, a AA battery, a manual, very tiny manual, and a micro SDHC card. That's it. No windscreen, no case, no strap. It is $99 after all. You can purchase for about $20 US a box of accessories which comes with a windscreen, a carrying case, very nice one as a matter of fact, a USB cable, an AC adapter, the stick that normally comes with the Zoom recorders to allow you to put it on a stand, and a tripod. All right, description. It's 136 millimeters long, 44 millimeters wide, and 31 millimeters thick. So that comes out roughly, according to my ruler, maybe 5 inches long, about 1 3/4 inches wide, and about 3/4 inch deep. The microphones are at the end of the recorder. It's longer than it is wide or deep. So you actually talk into the end of the recorder rather than the side of the recorder like you did on the H2. It's much like the H4N, the H4, the Sony PCMD50. The microphones are on the end of the recorder, pointing to the right and left at a 45-degree angle, giving you a maximum of 90 degrees. The microphones have a plastic protection around them. It's basically three wires that are in an oval shape across the top of the recorder with some connecting wires that connect them together. And the microphones are underneath those wires. You can certainly feel them. This isn't a mesh like it was on the H2. The microphones are offset, one above the other, pointing in at the 45-degree angle. The focus of the microphone on the top is between wires 1 and 2, and the focus of the microphone on the bottom is between wires 2 and 3. So it's not facing directly one of those protective wires. It's sort of going between them. It doesn't stick out between them, but the sound comes in without being impeded by first running into those wires. I want to make a very quick pass through the layout of this recorder so that people who are just getting it can quickly find all the buttons. And then I want to go back through each of them and talk a little more about them. If you have the recorder facing you so that the big round button, the record button in the middle of the front, is toward you, the microphones are at the top and the speaker is at the bottom. Below the microphones is the display. Below the display is the big round record button, and that's all there is on the front. On the right-hand side, at the top near the microphones, is the input jack for mic in and line in. Below that are the two volume buttons for manual record level, up being closer to the jack and down being further away. Below those buttons, you have the transport buttons, the play pause button in the middle. Above that, toward the microphones, is the forward button, and below the play button is the back button. Below those buttons is the file erase button, below that is the on-off and lock switch, and below that is the USB port. On the left-hand side of the recorder, there is the headphone jack at the top near the mics, the up and down volumes for that jack, and the card slot door. On the back of the units, there are three buttons near the top of the recorder. If you're facing the front of the recorder, feeling around to the back, on the right-hand side is the low-cut filter. Down is off and up is on, and that's true of all the buttons. In the middle is the automatic gain button, and on the left-hand side over here is the record format button, where you can change the sampling rate and the bit rate. Below those buttons is the threaded ring that allows you to mount the recorder on a stand. And below that is the battery compartment. On the bottom is a speaker, small but there. Now let's go through these controls in a little more detail. Right below the microphones, on the flat part of the front of the recorder, is the display, which is about the same size as that on the Zoom H2. Below that is one big round button, which is the record button. Record and stop button. I was afraid of that. And that's the only button on the front of the recorder. Now this is tricky. When you first turn the recorder on, you are in record standby. You can monitor through headphones and hear exactly what the microphones are picking up. So if you press the record button, it is going to go into record, and you've only pressed it once. Press it again, you go back into stop or record standby, and again you can hear what's happening in the mics. Press it again, you're in record. Press it again, you're back in record standby. So it can be a bit tricky. The way out of this, though, is that if you press play, if you press play while you're in record, it does nothing that you hear, but it does put a mark on the file such that Studio Recorder, SoundForge, and other professional software recorders will see that mark. But if you're in record standby and you press play, you start playing a file, and you can arrow back and forth with the forward and back buttons, which we'll get to later. Now let's talk about the right-hand side of the recorder. By the way, I have bass roll-off turned to the on position, so there should be less bass than there might be. At the top of the right-hand side, closest to the microphones, is the microphone in line-in jack, a 1/8 mini jack, stereo. Below that are a series of buttons. The first pair is the up and down volume for manual record. And you can manual record on this recorder. It has auto gain, but if you're manually recording, these are the buttons you would use for raising and lowering the volume. It defaults to volume 50 out of 100, and that's what I'm using now, although for the most part I'll be normalizing the files in this podcast, just because they'll be the same level as some of your other sounds. There will be a few times when I won't, and I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you when I do it. So they're the up and down buttons. Then below them are three buttons, the middle of which is the play button. The one above the play button toward the microphones is the forward wind, or skip, and the one below the play button is the backwards wind, or skip. They work like most other buttons of this nature. Hold them down and they skip through the file a little bit at a time. Press them and let them go, and they go to either the previous or next file. Below those buttons, the refrigerator is now on, I'm in the kitchen, is the file delete button. Now this is really kind of nice, because if you press the erase button while you're playing a file, the file stops playing. And I'm sure the screen says, do you want to really erase? But you don't see that necessarily. So you press the record button and the file's gone. It's very quick, but you really don't get a second chance. Of course, I guess you could turn the recorder off if you wanted to. Below that is the on-off switch, and this works just like the Olympus recorders and the Zoom H4n and lots of other recorders. It's a spring-loaded button. You hold down on it for a second or so, let it go, and the recorder comes on in 5 seconds or so. Now, that might depend on how big a card you have, but I have the 2-gig card that comes with the unit. Push that button up until it clicks, and you've locked the recorder so that no buttons work. Pull it down and hold it for another second or so, and the recorder turns itself off. And below that is the USB jack. Their implementation of USB is interesting, and actually kind of nice. If the unit is off, and you plug in the USB to the computer and to the unit, it will turn itself on and become a storage device, and so you can copy files to and from the recorder and the computer. During that time, you can't use any of the buttons on the recorder. However, if you have the unit already on when you plug it into your computer, you're now powering the unit through the USB connection from your computer. I know this because I've done it without the battery in it. You can actually turn your computer off, plug the unit in, hold down the on switch to turn it on, it will come on, and it will be using USB power as long as your computer is one of those that provides power even when it's off. So it's a rather interesting use of USB to allow your recorder to be used as a storage device, but to have the USB provide power to the recorder as well. On the left-hand side, at the top near the microphones, is the headphone jack, and below that are the up and down volumes for that jack, up on top, toward the microphones, and down below, away from the microphones. Below that is the card slot. If you turn the recorder so that the microphones are pointing toward your left, and you're looking at the left-hand side of the recorder, there's a little door. It's actually not a door. You pull up on it with your thumb from the bottom, and it opens, and it's a plastic piece that is attached to the recorder by a little plastic string. So it just sort of spins around and flops around and gets out of your way. At the top of that pretty wide opening there, most of which is not really open, it's just sort of indented, but there is a slit that you can feel that's at the very top of that opening, the slot being closer to the button side of the recorder, the front side, than the back side. You hold the card so that the lip on the end of the card is toward you and is pointing up, and the right-hand side has the little ridges on it. You slide the card in and depress it, and it clicks. When you want to take it out, you press it in, it pops out a little bit, and you take it out the rest of the way. And then you can close the door by bringing the little plastic piece around and putting it in the right place and pressing it, and now it's flat against the side of the recorder. And that's the only thing on the left side of the recorder. The bottom of the recorder has a speaker. It's not a very big speaker because the bottom's not very big, but it's pretty good. It does at least allow you to know that things have been recorded, and that is what the Zoom H2 missed, and this one fortunately has one. The back of the recorder is interesting. Here's where you get your controls for operating things that you don't operate in menus. I'm holding the recorder sort of 45-degree angle pointing up to me. The mics are 45-degree angle pointing up at me, and my fingers wrap around to the back of the recorder. So imagine that you're looking at the recorder, microphone over here is to the left, microphone over there is to the right, and your fingers are on the back of the recorder. Near the right-hand side of the recorder, at the top, right below the microphones, is a button. There are actually 3 buttons. The first one is the low-cut filter. Down is always off, up is always on these 3 buttons. The middle button is the automatic gain control. Now, what I'm going to do is stop normalizing the next part of this file and let you hear what it sounds like when you record a file at volume 50, and then I'm going to turn on the auto gain. So this is volume 50. This is the volume I get. Now let's turn on auto gain. Yes, I have email, and you can see it automatically went to the top of the volume. This is about what you'd get if you were at 100 on the volume scale. And if I talk louder, it's okay for a while. It's still way up there. And if I yell really loudly, it turns it down. And you see how long it took to have it come up again. And if I blow into it, now be careful, I'm going to make a blowing noise. I don't want to wreck your speakers. Once again, it stays down for a while and you talk. And all of a sudden, when it makes up its mind to, or when it hears another sound, like if I walk in here toward the refrigerator, see, it just heard the refrigerator. It said, ah, I have to center on it now. He stopped talking. I need to hear the refrigerator as loudly as I heard his voice. Not a very good automatic gain control, in my opinion. So, we go back to gain off, normalization zero. The third button, the one furthest to the left microphone, is what you use to control record format. Bitrate, sampling rate, etc. Down, off, rather, is PCM WAV. Up is MP3. How do you change with no menus between your bit rates, sampling rates on 44.1 or 48 or 96 or 24-bit or 16-bit, etc., and how do you change the kbps rates on MP3 files? You do that by being in record standby and pressing the forward and back buttons. If you press the forward or back button, let's say you're in PCM WAV, you press the forward and rewind buttons and you arrow through 44.116, 44.124, 48.16, 48.24, all the way up to 96.16 and 96.24-bit, and then guess what? You circle back around again to 44.1 16-bit. So you could accidentally, given that these buttons are as small as they are, press the wrong button at the wrong time and be in a totally different format. Same thing happens with MP3. Simply push the button up to MP3, and now you arrow through your kbps rates with the forward and backwards arrows. And again, you wrap. So this could be a bit of a problem in that you could accidentally do that if you weren't careful. Below those three buttons on the back is a threaded ring for mounting on a camera tripod. It's not your typical microphone mount. It's the same you have on the Zoom H2, the H4, the H4N, the Sony PCMD50. It mounts on a camera tripod. And they actually, in their pack of accessories, which you buy separately, you get a little tripod that sort of works. The only thing on the back below that is the battery compartment. And it is on the left as I face the front of the recorder. But if you turn the recorder to the right so that the microphones are facing the right and you lay it on its front with the buttons down, toward you on the bottom half of the recorder is the battery compartment. There's a little finger grabber place that you can put your finger in. Slide the battery cover toward you, it comes off, and there's one AA battery. Slide the cover back on, and you've covered up the battery slot. Now there's one thing I need to mention about the microSD card. The recorder will operate for 25 seconds, even without a card. That's kind of nice for setting up the recorder and getting your mics adjusted, etc., but it could be a problem if you think you have a card in there. So if you've taken out your card, and you've forgotten you've done that, and you put it in record, normally most recorders aren't going to do anything but sit there and say, hey, you don't have a card there. This one will record for 25 seconds and then stop. So make sure you've got a card in, and you'll avoid that problem. One more item before we go on further. The H1 is touted as having no menus, and it doesn't, except for a couple of what I would call mini menus. For example, setting the time. There's no visible clock on the unit, but the recorder does timestamp the files if you set the clock. In order to do that, you hold down the record button while you turn the recorder on, and you're taken to the clock settings, which of course are totally visual, and you'll probably have to have someone help you do that. The only other instance of a sort of quasi-menu item is how you format the card. In order to do this, hold down the Erase button while turning on the recorder, and a format menu appears. I'm sure it says, "Do you want to format?" And you simply press the Record button, and it goes ahead and does it. Doesn't give you a second chance, it just wipes out the card. If you have your headphones plugged in while you're formatting the card, once the format concludes, you'll be taken back to record standby, and you'll once again be able to hear the sound coming through the mics. But those are the only two instances of where you need to do something that you can't do physically on the recorder. All right, I believe that's all we need to say about recorder functions and what they do. Now let's go have some fun. Well, thank you. I put an order in for those vehicles to go by. Right, of course I did. But at least you get some idea of spread. As I was about to say, 90 degrees is not a lot. It is mono-compatible, but it is not something that you're going to hear really way over to the right and really way over to the left. You'll be able to tell, and certainly with those cars and that motorcycle, you could. But other microphone arrangements have a bit more spread. And I think it's time for me to oil the door. For me to go back inside and slam the doors. Ah, yes. I'm going to turn this down to volume 50 now. And see how that was. I'm making a big deal, evidently, about recording at volume 50. If I were to record at volume 50, or some volume that would keep most things from being distorted, the loud sounds would be really loud, and the low sounds would be way down there in the volume spectrum. What I'm trying to show you when I go down to volume 50 is that it's a pretty good volume to record at, in that when I close a door or make any loud noise, more often than not, the loud sound doesn't distort. It is at zero or close to zero, and of course, if I made louder noises, I could distort. But 50 is a pretty good volume to record without peaking the meters. So that's why sometimes I want to not normalize the file, so you can hear what it sounds like recorded at volume 50 and what kind of meter readings I get. One thing to consider, though, is that the Zoom H2 had manual level control, but with its manual level control, you also had a limiter. You had a compressor that would do what this does, and that is just jack the whole thing up and auto-record and whatever. But you could do manual record and you could have a limiter. So you could actually turn the gain up a ways, knowing that really high sounds were going to get turned down by the limiter. You can't do that here, because once you go out of automatic level control, there is no limiter. It's just pure manual record, and if you distort, you distort. And 50, in the middle of the volume spectrum, is probably a pretty good place to be. One of the criticisms of the Zoom H2 was that while its internal microphones were very nice, recording with external microphones could be really noisy. So let's give that a try. I'm going to start with a microphone that's very hard to record on a lot of recorders because it's a very low output mic. It's my Electrovoice RE635, which on the Sony PCMD50 is quite quiet. It's a little less quiet on the Zoom H4N. On the Zoom H2, it's awful. Let's see what it's like on the Zoom H1. And this is the Electrovoice RE635 microphone. I actually have the Zoom on auto gain because that will take it to the top of the scale, which is where this microphone needs to be anyway. And as you can hear, it's quite noisy. Now, there are others that might work better. Let's try something else. This is the Radio Shack over the head microphone that I often use to test recorders. It requires plug-in power, so obviously this recorder has that. Give you a bit of time to listen to noise. This is a not totally quiet mic, but it's pretty quiet relative to some. I'm still on volume 50, so this volume might be a good overall average place to be. And these are the sound professionals in ear microphones, a set of mics that I know a number of people have. I need to wash up a couple dishes here, or just rinse them off. Let's see how this sounds in the process. These are pretty inexpensive mics. They actually fit in your ears. These are the dishwasher, as opposed to on the outside of your ears, so they're a bit more binaural than quasi-binaural. That's weird noise. Wash out my cereal bowl. Put it over here on the counter. Wash out the plate. Put it over here. And there's some garbage here, so I get to run the garbage disposal. It's a pretty new, quiet garbage disposal, so it may not make that much noise. Not some. Well, that's not how you're really supposed to do that, but I thought it would sound good. Let's see, what else can I do? I can go out and open the garage door. Bit of oil required, you think? And it's windy out here as I step outside. No traffic coming, so not really anything to record in a stereo spectrum. By the way, I'm still on volume 50. Turning around, going back inside. That seems to be a good place to be. I'm using my DPA microphones at the moment, and I'm very muffled, because I'm in the middle of them, which is where you are when you wear binaural headphones. I was playing around with the floor noise of this recorder and was very surprised to discover that at 44.1 sampling rate, 24-bit, the floor noise was at or below minus 90 dB when I turned the recorder down to volume 1. It still records at volume 1. In fact, that's what I'm recording on now. And I'm going to normalize these mics and this recording to zero, and see if I pick up a lot of floor noise on the way up. These are the DPA microphones on the Zoom H1 at volume 1. Let's listen to noise. You can hear my wife downstairs reading a book on tape. But these are quite quiet. The only noise you hear is that of the microphones themselves. And I've actually recorded some very loud sounds into this mic, equal to recording a train. And by George, it works on this recorder. And these are the same microphones, the Danish Pro Audio microphones, very nice microphones, recording on the Eddyroll R09HR at its lowest volume. Wow, that's amazing. It could very well be that the Zoom H1 is not very good at low volume mics, but for mics like this, which are very high volume, maybe it works much better than the Eddyroll. I've actually used the Eddyroll. Now, the Eddyroll is not the quietest recorder I have by far, but I've used it actually to record loud sounds like trains with these microphones, because by the time you get a train going through, you don't really hear the hissing noise. But there is some. A whole lot more, evidently, than there is on the Zoom. And by the way, I'm recording both these samples in 44.1, 24-bit. Wow, that's amazing. Night crickets, recorded from my front porch on the Zoom H1. You knew this was going to happen. It had to happen. The ultimate battle between the H1 and the H2. A little bit of music, Mr. Mannheim Steamroller, I don't think he'll mind. First on the H2, and then on the H1. Which do you like the best? that is interesting indeed. I kind of expected that the H2 wouldn't have as good a stereo spread as the H1 because of the way the microphones are housed in that grillwork with a plastic piece on either side, which, in my opinion, has kept the H2 from having the kind of stereo spread I think it should have. But I didn't expect the microphones to sound that different, unless the cage of the H2 is actually impeding the upper frequencies. Boy, there's really quite a difference. I'm not going to comment further because you probably have your own opinions. Well, I think it's time to wrap up with a few closing thoughts. One of the things I haven't mentioned on this podcast is that you can do line-in recordings. Even though there's no line-in jack on this recorder, the volume control will go low enough that you can, in fact, do line-in recordings. I actually recorded from a nominal line-out source with the volume at 0, and I was probably at minus 15, so I could have upped that some and still been well within range. So it is possible to record line-in by simply turning down the volume. Too bad the controls are so hard to deal with. You can do it, but boy, they are tiny. And that's another thing. All the buttons on the side of the recorder, the play, the backwards, the forward, they're all very tiny. Unlike the Olympus, which has some pretty small buttons as well, and their buttons are extruded out of the case of the recorder, the zoom buttons are sort of flush with the surface of the case, and when you press them, they go in. And if your finger is wide enough like mine is, you can't get them in very far. So it's really hard to press them and a little bit difficult to find. However, I'm discovering I'm getting more used to it, and I think people will. It's just a matter of what you have to get used to, and I think it's doable, although they are very tiny. There is not, unfortunately, a way to pause a file without ending the file. There is record and stop, and there's no pause, which is too bad. That would have been nice. I don't think there's one on the H2 either, actually. You do get a fair amount of handling noise with this recorder, as you do with the H2 as well. So one has to keep that in mind. It is just obviously plastic, and there's been not a whole lot of attempt made to make it feel like the world's greatest feeling recorder, which for $99, well, that's what you'd think. Overall, I'd have to say I like it. It's a nice little recorder for $99, and for that price, I'm not sure, well, yes, I am sure, I don't think you can do any better. Whether you like it or not is one thing. Whether you can do any better for $99, in my opinion, I don't think you can. So, this is the H1 being put through some of its paces. We could probably do a lot more, but time is waning and it's time for us to leave. Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with me, my email address is neal@ravenswood.org. Thanks for listening. We'll likely meet again soon.